Greetings from the 2024 Bio International Conference. I'm Dwayne Schultes, and on this Vital Health podcast, I'm speaking to Nicholas Bloomberg, the Executive Director of the EU's Innovative Health Initiative. IHI is funded jointly by the European Commission and industry. The total budget for IHI from 21 to 27 is 2.4 billion euros. Nicholas, you just joined IHI as Executive Director this year in January. It's great to meet you. We hadn't met before.
No, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Dwayne. It's a privilege.
I don't know if it's a privilege, but certainly a pleasure. Thank you very much. So I'm familiar, and many people are familiar, with the Innovative Medicines Initiative, a real prototype in, you know, public-private partnerships that the EU ran for many years. Now it's the Innovative Health Initiative. How has it differed, and how has it evolved?
Yeah, it's a great question. So first is to say it's really very much of the same. We like to think about ourselves as the world's largest public-private partnership for health research. And the Innovative Health Initiative is really an evolution of IMI, the Medicines Initiative. And the big difference is really that we broaden out the initiative. So previously, we partnered with the pharma industry and the research-based pharmaceutical companies in Europe. And now we're taking a much more comprehensive view on health. And so we're bringing in medical technologies. We're bringing in the device makers, the imaging, and the radiology companies. So I think that's a really exciting development. So it helps us taking a sort of broad look at healthcare and run some really interesting projects.
One of the challenges between pharmaceuticals, which has been the core focus of the IMI, and then bringing in the diagnostics, the device, the imaging, it's the speed at which they work, as well as the regulatory pressures. They haven't always played well together. And you come from drug discovery. Mm-hmm. This is something you know extremely well. How are you getting them to sort of play nice together in the same sandbox?
Yeah, it is a challenge. It's a real challenge. And I think we just need to look around at bio here and see the acceleration of technology. They work typically in very different time frames. They also work with different payer and regulatory systems.
And different IP approaches too, as well.
Yeah, and very different sort of uptake approaches in the European healthcare system. So I think that's a real challenge, and we're looking at that. That said, I think we've found a couple of sweet spots in the early projects. So we have a really interesting project on real data in lung cancer.
Interesting.
And so that's bringing together pharma, but also device makers and even patient organizations, but even health technology assessment bodies. And so it's really taking quite a broad look at some of the fundamental problems. So what is the type of data that you can collect? How can you collect that in an acceptable way for the patients? And how can you use that both to understand the value of the medical treatments as well as the value of the different devices as they are being deployed in the healthcare system.
It's really interesting. You mentioned the HTAs. I would think that they would very much appreciate having sort of a one-stop shop. Is that the feedback you've been getting?
I think that's part of what we're trying to do. And so, I mean, one of the things that we try to do in IHI is really to be that neutral broker, a platform where...
A convening body.
Yeah, it's a platform where a lot of different organizations that normally struggle to work together, even though they know they need to work together. So it's very hard for, say, a regulator to work with one or two companies.
Right.
They need to take a much more open and broad approach. And I think we provide that. And so we have a lot of our projects are bringing in together regulators, a broad set of companies, but then also the actors from civil society, representation from the healthcare systems, but representation from the patient bodies. And I think that allows a different type of dialogue. And I think it allows both the regulators to understand the value proposition from the companies, but also for the healthcare systems and the companies to understand some of the constraints around regulation and validation. So I think that's really one of the areas where we can be active.
Now, IMI was pre-competitive in biopharmaceuticals. That was sort of the objective. Now that you have all the technology players there, have the objectives shifted a bit? What do you see are the core goals that you're trying to hit?
Well, I mean, fundamentally, if you bring together 5-10 companies into one project, public-private partnership, it's going to be pre-competitive.
Sure.
This is not about product development. This is about addressing some of the sort of fundamentals in the landscape. If we look before in IMI, a lot of those questions were around disease mechanism and validation and understanding the stratification of disease. I think that's still there. And I think the ability to bring in also the medical technology and the diagnostics companies has almost strengthened that. So we can look at advanced biomarkers. I think we have a call this summer launching on patient-centric outcomes using digital technologies. I think that's, again, one of these areas where both the pharma sector and the technology sector are coming together. How can you use some of these digital endpoints to really understand the lived experience of patients and the lived experience of disease? And can you actually validate that in a way that it can be used as an endpoint in a clinical trials or a regulatory process? And I think those are really important questions that all of the companies, regardless of sector, want to approach. And I think if we find ways forward, I think that can really transform the way we're doing healthcare research in Europe.
And because it's a public-private partnership and it's pre-competitive, you create this, I don't want to say safe space, it's almost a cliche, but in some ways it's an area where, okay, we can all live in this box and work together, and then we can go our own merry way and do our own things afterwards.
Yeah, and the words might be a cliche, but I think it's there is a real genuine need for that. I mean, safe space, safe harbor, neutral sure. platform, call it whatever you want, but I think there is a real need, if we look at the healthcare systems, for to convene all the actors to look at the challenges.
So now I mentioned this earlier, you used to work at a very high level in drug discovery, particularly with AstraZeneca and other companies as well. I mean, you came from the private sector. Why did you decide to join the public sector? What was the motivation?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So honestly, I don't think I ever looked at it that way, Dwayne.
Sure, okay.
So I think that the driver for me was always the job. So the sort of the interesting, the challenge of the task. So I worked for AstraZeneca. That was about 13 years ago. I left AstraZeneca to move over to the UK to set up an intergovernmental research organization for genomics. And I remember at the time I thought, well, you only get this question once in your career to start a new organization internationally from scratch. So it was pretty much a no-brainer at that point. And I think IHI for me was really the same thing. It's a great job. It's a really interesting program. It's got some really exciting projects running. And you only get the opportunity to be part of and shape that research landscape for health in Europe once in your career. So I think that's more the driver than public-private. And I don't really think about it as different sectors. There are a number of different actors that need to come together to make this space work.
You know, Sweden is such a dynamic country for biodiscovery and bioengineering. Do you miss rolling up your sleeves and getting in the bench? I mean, do you miss it a bit?
Yes, of course I do. Of course you do. But yeah, and I haven't been to, I mean, it's a long time since I left Sweden. So I do get homesick at time.
Well, Nikolaj Brunn, who you may know, who's a former regulator from the Danish agency, who keeps one foot in and out, he sort of hops into regulation and out. Now, he's working with a startup in Affibodies, you know, which could be the next generation monoclonal antibodies. There's some fantastic technology there. Are you excited by what you're seeing as the emerging technology now in the EU? I mean, in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that we're looking at. So we had a great meeting earlier this year. We called it the Regulatory Science Summit, but that is really about bringing together both industry, regulators, and health technology assessors, but also researchers. And I think that the key question we had in that meeting was really, what is the science that we need to start now to make sure that we can provide sort of regulatory pathways of the products of tomorrow? So I think that's and we have a couple of projects around that, and we're launching.
What are those projects? That's interesting.
So we're launching one this summer. We call it the regulatory sandbox. So we're really trying to think about how will a regulatory sandbox work inside. As you know, there is quite a lot of regulation coming coming in Europe now.
I've heard, yes.
and so a question. I think that's a question both for the regulators and for industries. Is really, how do you take these innovative products through a regulatory pathway, and no one really knows. And I think one of the things that we can do, and so we're launching a project around that, both to set the frameworks and then some pilot projects.
So if people are interested in these, is there some way for them to come in to IHI? Because I understand you're working on some of these projects that are launching with smaller SME-based companies. This is one of the innovations that's occurred since IMI with the IHI. How do people reach out to you if they wanted to get involved in the projects?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question. I'll say a few things. So one thing is that, I mean, as a program, what we are trying to do is to fund large collaborative projects. That's inherent in the program. That's really our role in the landscape. And so that means that if you're working in a large collaborative project, you need to start early. You need to reach out to your network and to your collaborators and see, how do I bring together, how do I get to be part of a consortia, or how do I build a consortia with all the different expertises that's needed? And I think that's really the key. If you look at our calls and you look at our topics, you will see that they are inherently interdisciplinary. And so that means that you need to be able to work with people from other sectors. So I think that's the first, really work through your network and try to activate that. I think the second space is make use of all the resources that we are putting forward. And some of these resources are really meant there for partnering and brokering. We're running brokering events, which are really meant for small companies, well, academics with brilliant ideas, but also for small companies to come and present themselves and get to know other organizations and individuals who are interested in our calls. And those are advertised well in advance of our calls. So that's really, I think that's really an important inroads. And I should say that small companies can be funded under IHI. So the big players will contribute in kind as right. part of the public-private partnership.
Yeah.
But small and mid-sized companies, they really come in as beneficiaries, and we welcome SMEs to join, and they can be funded for the work they're doing in our projects.
And you point out something really interesting. In the U.S., the distinctions between public and private partnership are often defined by the National Institutes of Health. In many ways, the European Commission is adopting these positions. That's sort of the mm-hmm. role you're trying to serve mm-hmm. on some level. How do you personally, given the fact you too have had one foot mm-hmm. in the public and one foot in the private sector,
yeah.
how do you see the role between the two in Europe? How do you see them working?
So, I mean, I think that my starting point is I fundamentally really believe in comprehensive and inclusive public healthcare systems. And if you start from that point, that really an important part of society is to provide comprehensive and inclusive care for all the citizens, then you not need to start to think, well, how do you manage that long term? And I think that's really where the private, public-private partnership comes in. So we know, and we just need to look around a bit, Edwin, the amount of innovation that's happening in the private sector. And so I think the question is, how do we make sure that innovation really works within the healthcare system and that it ultimately reaches the patients? And how can we match that up with important unmet public health needs? And I think that's really the what we're trying to do. We're defining some unmet public health needs, and then we're trying to bring together both the public sector actors, but the strength of innovation that we see in the private sector and drive that towards these outcomes.
Well, Scandinavia has been incredibly successful at this yeah. in many respects. It manages to split the baby, as we say. Yeah. in the States, you know, I mean, you've managed to keep the public health, but, you know, arguably Novo Nordisk, a Danish company now, last time I checked, its market capitalization is larger than the entire GDP of Denmark broadly. Mm. I mean, a hugely successful company.
Mm. Yeah.
You've got tremendous entrepreneurial activity in Sweden. I guess the question is, how do you see, you know, a role of IHI, you know, managing to amplify that more broadly across the EU?
So I think that's a really good, and I think part of what we're doing, so we are not a capacity building mm-hmm. program. We are an excellence driven program. And so our calls are always evaluated. The projects and the submissions are always evaluated based on excellence, not about capacity building. There are other programs in the European Union that are targeting that. But that said, I think if you look at the public health needs, the diversity is incredibly important. And we have a topic opening this summer on cardiovascular prevention and care. And really the core of that topic is to compare prevention, care and outcomes in different systems in Europe. And so to work with the private sector, but also work with public sectors and try to understand. So how does different treatment intervention work in different healthcare systems? And so I think that's part of what we're doing. We're trying to spread that excellence. And the other is that we are quite inclusive in our calls. We see excellence isn't only confined to the larger cities in Northwest Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, we sit across from the Estonian
booth, exactly.
Estonian booth here is, it's amazing innovation happening in the Baltic region. There is a big Spanish pavilion here. There is the sort of center of AI in Europe is perhaps in Paris and then also in some of the Spanish regions. So I think it Europe is quite diverse, and we really try to draw on that skill set and their diversity.
I mean, you mentioned AI, you mentioned Estonia. One of the challenges we're seeing in Europe still, and we hear this regularly from our clients, is the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. You've brought in data companies and data mining as part of the service. How are you dealing with that in the prospect of building up calls and new technologies? How are you, in a pre-competitive environment, managing that and making sure it's not an impediment?
Well, so I think part of, and if you think about Europe, there has been quite a lot of regulation in that data space recently. You had GDPR, you have now the European Health Data Space Regulation just coming into force. You have the AI Act and things like that. And of course, I think there are two things to think about when it comes to regulation, or maybe three things. So the first is, of course, that it takes time to translate that regulation into operational procedures. And I think we see that sort of friction in the system now. I think the other thing that is difficult is try to understand how do the different regulations work together. So what is the intersection between, say, the AI Act and the GDPR?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a question many companies. And I think this is where these sort of regulatory sandbox concepts are really important, and so that's part of what we're trying to fund.
Interesting. So you're going to try and put together coalitions to and calls and consortiums to deal around those issues and experiment them. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think that that's perhaps an important role. If you think about regulation, I mean, we regulate as a society. You regulate with a purpose. You try to set up guardrails to create the society that you want to live in. That creates friction to innovation, of course, because there are guardrails around. And so what you need to do is really double down on the innovation investments. And I think IHI is part of that doubling down. It's part of our job is to drive consortia in this space and trying to work with all the actors to understand how you can operate with data. And I think one area where we've traditionally invested quite a lot is real-world data, real-world evidence.
Sure.
And we see a lot of consortia in this space. And I think they really challenge the notion that you can't share data across borders in Europe, because we see some of our projects have over 800 million patient records available in a federated system. So that's you can definitely share data at a very large scale, or access data at a very large scale. But I think the question is if you want to use this data not only for regulatory purposes, but also to understand diseases or understand, say, the effect of knee replacements and the knee surgery to improve procedures. How do you do that together with the device manufacturers or the prosthetics manufacturer in a way that the patient trusts?
Right.
And I think to set up and understand how that should operate, I think that's a really important role for IHI, because, again, all of our projects are public-private partnership. We bring together companies, we bring together researchers, hospitals, but we also bring together that part of civil society, so the patient organizations and the payers.
So if a small company or a new technology would want to get involved in these calls, how can they become a part of IHI? How do they do this practically?
Well, you roll up your sleeve and you write a really good application.
Of course.
I think that's what. No, I mean, and it's easy to say, but unfortunately, our calls are really competitive.
Sure.
And I think that shows that this is a space where you could probably live with a lot larger investments. There is an appetite both from the public side, but also from the companies to participate in these type of consortia, because we see a healthy interest in our calls. But I think, as I said before, I think the best advice is really to look at our website and make sure that you attend the brokering events. So we do try to drive matchmaking with open events where companies and academics can come and pitch their ideas, or just get to know other interested parties and help to seed the consortia.
Well, Nicholas, I have to say, Vital Transformation, we've had a long history with the Innovative Medicines Initiative, worked very closely with the organization with several projects. I wish you all success and congratulations on the new directorship of IHI, and I hope we can keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks. It was great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity, Brian.
Thank you, Nicholas.
The executive producer of the Vital Health Podcast is Dwayne Schultes. Our editor is Mark Brodeen. Our project manager is Gwen O'Loughlin. The Vital Health Podcast is a production of Vital Transformation, LLC, copyright 2024.